You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, we will be covering the case of Kristen Rae Dunlap. On October 14, 1994, Kristen's mother would head to work, leaving the then 17-year-old Kristen at home. When she returned home from work that day, Kristen and her belongings were gone, but her mother found a note from Kristen stating she needed to go sort herself out and would be back in a year. Kristen has not been seen by her family since. This case has been very difficult to research because there's not much information out there. There is a Facebook post and very few articles that just repeat the same information, and it has been this way for years. However, just recently, the Idaho State Journal released a new article by Alexandra Dugan that finally gives us more insight into Kristen's disappearance. Hopefully that article will bring her story back into the public focus so that her family can finally get some answers and Kristen can get the justice she deserves. So between the articles and the Facebook posts and Reddit, I'm going to do my best to put this case together for you guys. So let's dive in. Kristen was the middle child out of three siblings. Kristen and her siblings were of a blended family. Kristen had hazel eyes and dirty blonde hair, and people say that she was fiercely loyal. Kristen's older stepsister, Crystal, said that her smile was large, lively, and animated. Crystal said her smile is still the first thing she sees when she remembers her baby sister, something she misses the most. Crystal remembers that Kristen loved to record VHS videos of them dancing in the backyard. She said that her sister had a free-spirited demeanor. Kristen's friends in school said that she was super adventurous and up for anything. Her high school friend Lindsay recalls that she loved to do silly dances, tell hilarious jokes, and put on small skits. You could also find her singing along to Garth Brooks songs. Kristen was always up for late night adventures with her sister and her friends, which could include toilet papering houses. Lindsay remembers when they were in high school that Kristen was also into rock and roll music and liked Led Zeppelin's Misty Mountain Hop, which was her favorite choice of music on road trips to the Idaho Hot Springs with her friends. Lindsay also recalls that she loved Iron Man from Black Sabbath. That was also her favorite song. She remembers Kristen telling her while playing it for her the first time that this song is going to change your world. While Kristen seemed close with all her siblings, she definitely had a very deep bond with her younger brother, Daniel, who was just 10 years old when she disappeared. Friends and family still say today that Kristen couldn't go long without speaking to or seeing Daniel. Even as she got older, as there would be more and more problems that arose in the dynamic of their household, her and Daniel still stayed close, and Kristen made sure to see him and speak to him as much as possible. Crystal says growing up that Kristen could be somewhat of a challenge as a kid, but honestly, they had a bit of a hard childhood between having the splendid family, the death of her father, and divorces. It was a lot. Kristen had been diagnosed with ADHD, which might have something to do with her family thinking she was a bit difficult with handling the constant changes that were happening in her childhood. Crystal said that Kristen and her mother often fought, but they always came back together. She said that they could outright disagree, but they would always still end up as tight as ever before. Kristen was known to run away a lot, so that day on October 1994, her mother finding a note from her saying that she was leaving and she'd be back wasn't out of the ordinary for her. Whenever Kristen would run away, she'd always contact a friend or family member either the next day or within a week of her leaving. It was never longer than that. and she would never go more than a week without speaking to her little brother Daniel. He was her entire world. Now the timeline gets a little hazy here, so I'm going to do my best to piece it together. Lindsay says the last time that she saw Kristen was that October when she had driven her to a storage unit to get some sentimental belongings. Kristen had told her that she had decided she needed to get away for a while. After leaving the storage unit, Lindsay said that she later drove Kristen to a friend's that Kristen had made arrangements with to stay at. Lindsay remembers watching Kristen take the box of belongings out of her white Geo Prism and walking away. And that's the last time she would ever see her. So let's back it up just a little bit and try to get some information on why Kristen felt like she had to leave home and left this note for her mother, and why she had her friend pick her up and take her belongings to another friend's house. What did Kristen mean when she said in her note that she had to get herself together? There are so many unanswered questions, but when we dig a little deeper, maybe we can find the answers. When Kristen was 15, she worked at Art in the Park at the Round Table Pizza Booth. That is when she would meet Charles Corey Castro. He went by Corey. He was a driver for the local Coca-Cola company and 25 at the time. There's not a whole lot of information on Corey out there, but we do know that when he first met Kristen, he was 10 years her senior, was a felon on parole for theft, and was married. However, that did not stop him from pursuing Kristen, and they would start dating when she was just 15 years old. It doesn't state when or how Kristen's mother found out about this relationship. However, it's clear that when her mother Kim did find out about this, she was not okay with it. She absolutely disapproved of this relationship. When Kim did discover this was going on, she would eventually reach out to Corey's parole officer in hopes that he would help keep Corey away from Kristen. Even with her mother's disapproval, this relationship seemed to continue. When Kristen was 16, Kim finally had some evidence that she felt she could present as proof that there had been sexual activity between Kristen and Corey. She attempted to file statutory rape charges with the Boise Police Department. The Boise Police Department and the prosecutor's office would not press charges, stating that Kristen knew what she was doing. Kristen's family and friends truly believe that Kristen's relationship with Corey was a physically, mentally, and sexually abusive relationship. Crystal said that Kristen was completely a different person around Corey when she was with him. She didn't smile, and her normally spunky attitude was completely dulled around him. Her friends and family were trying to do everything to get her out of this relationship. Lindsay recalls Kristen once telling her that she wanted to just get on a bus to Oregon to be safe from her boyfriend for a while. Family and friends had witnessed multiple fights between Corey and Kristen. They also noticed lots of bruises on Kristen. Crystal has said that she also herself witnessed multiple explosive fights between the two of them. Lindsay said that Corey threatened Kristen to never tell the police about the abuse. Lindsay truly believes Kristen was doing the best in the situation that she could. Kristen went on to tell her that she felt trapped. She told Lindsay that she needed to escape her boyfriend and felt like running away may be the best and only option. On October 14th, 1994, the day before Kristen would leave, a note for her mother saying that she was leaving. Kristen and her mother would meet with Corey, now 27 at the time, Corey's probation officer, and Corey's wife at his probation office, all in hopes that Kim could finally get her daughter to see the truth of what was going on here with the help of the probation officer. Kim had hopes that between the probation officer and finally seeing Corey's wife face to face, Kristen would finally walk away. See, Corey had been telling Kristen this whole time that, yes, he had a wife, but it was his ex-wife. They were divorced or in the process of being divorced. So when Kim and Kristen arrived to this meeting and Corey's very not divorced wife was there, I can only imagine how Kristen felt. It is said that all Corey could say in the meeting to explain himself was, shit happens, and all Kristen could respond with was tears as she left with her mother that day. Corey says that during that meeting, he was told by his probation officer that he cannot continue seeing Kristen, and so after that meeting, he cut off all communication with her. However, Kristen's friends and family would tell a very different story. So I will say that there is a discrepancy on whether the note was left on October 14th or 15th and whether October 14th or 15th was the day that they met with Corey's probation officer. In many articles, each date is kind of swapped around. But we do know on one of those 2 days, Kristen would leave this note for her mother saying that she was leaving. There must have been something that told her mother that this was different because she immediately called the police the next day to report her daughter missing. Kim says because her daughter had been a habitual runaway, the police did not take the missing report seriously. In fact, Kristen was listed as a runaway until 1998. So for 4 years, no one in law enforcement is looking for Kristen or taking this case as seriously as it needed to be taken. Her mother, Kim, and her family wouldn't give up on her and hire a private investigator, and they continue to put pressure on the police department to help find her. Friends of Kristen say that they did have some contact with her up until about middle December of 1994. Kristen had never gotten her driver's license, so she needed her friends to help transport her to various places. There's also reports saying that after Kristen left her mother's house on that October day, she did put in a forwarding mailing address to a friend's house. Sometime between October 15th and December, police were actually called to a domestic dispute outside of a liquor store where they found both Kristen and Corey arguing with each other. Apparently, both Kristen and Corey spoke with police officers and were released without any charges that day. The last sighting of Kristen, according to her friend, was allegedly seeing Corey pick up Kristen for them to drive out to McCall, Idaho together. We can confirm that Kristen did reside in McCall, a town just 2 hours north of Boise, because she was employed in the city at a hotel for at least 1 day. Friends say by mid-December that they had completely lost contact with Kristen. Kristen's Social Security checks that she got from her father's death stopped being cashed. Kristen, who had been tracked down to the small hotel in McCall using her Social Security number, has never used her Social Security number again to gain employment anywhere. That's where the trail ends. People would say later that Corey would return to Boise from McCall without Kristen. Corey would move on and end up finding another girlfriend that had a very young daughter. And in 1998, Corey would be charged and prosecuted with lewd and lascivious conduct with a minor under the age of 16 and serve prison time. You can currently find Corey listed on the state's sex offender registry. Corey Castro is now 54 and resides in a small town called Murphy, about an hour southwest of Boise. To this day, Corey maintains that the last time he saw Kristen was in that meeting with his parole officer, who addressed him and told him that he could no longer see Kristen, and that he listened to his parole officer and hasn't seen her since. He goes on to say that he never knew she was missing for 10 years because he was in prison. Corey said throughout the years that he was interrogated about Kristen's disappearance, and that in 2011, he spent hours being questioned by Boise police violent crime detectives, and that he passed a polygraph test that his parole officer gave him regarding Kristen's disappearance. He claims that this polygraph test validates that he is innocent. Corey says, quote, "Between interrogation, a PO, and a polygraph, I don't see how they can turn around and go against science. You got two detectives that say they are the best in the police department trying to interrogate you, and afterwards they say she's a runaway, and I'm not the person of interest no more," unquote. Castro went on to say that him and Kristen barely ever fought and that he could not recall any blow-up arguments outside of a liquor store. He denied ever seeing Kristen and McCall and added that he was not even aware that this was the last place she was seen. He said, quote, "I didn't know she lived in McCall. I didn't even know she had a job there," unquote. Corey goes on to say that he understands the grief that her family's going through, but he believes that all this information about him is being fabricated to place the blame on him. He believes Kristen really left to get away from her family and that she always talked about moving to California. He said, quote, "They're placing their grief on me trying to vindicate themselves from any hurt," unquote. Crystal really believes that her stepsister was a victim of domestic violence and that she one day intended to come back to her family, but then foul play might have cut Kristen's life short. Her family still speculates that Corey was involved in what happened to her and her disappearance, and that her body might have been disposed of somewhere in Ohio. Crystal really does not want people to judge Kristen as a troubled kid. She wants people to remember her as an adventurous, loyal person. She was a victim who still has no justice. Crystal said, quote, "She's a person, she's a sister, she's a daughter, she's part of the family that is gone. Give us a way to say goodbye." Her family wants closure. They want to give answers to a grieving mother. As a mother, I can't imagine not knowing what happened to one of my kids and never being able to hug them again to say goodnight, unquote. Crystal's family has continued searching for answers. They've set up a reward fund organized by Crystal for information leading to Kristen's location. The family encourages donations of any size. Crystal hopes that those that come across Kristen's case don't just see her sister as a runaway, but someone who deserves to be found and put to rest. Crystal says, quote, "She was my sister. This isn't her. This isn't who she was to be gone this long. The more attention, the better," unquote. On November 2021, Kristen's age progression photo was updated in the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children. Her information is posted on Idaho's Missing Person Clearinghouse, the Charlie Project, and the National Crime Information Center. Kristen would be 44 years old today. If you have any information on Kristen or any tips on this case, please reach out to the Boise Police Department at 208-377-6790. Thank you for listening to a mini episode today. I know that these are going to be shorter than normal, but when I do release these shorter ones, I am trying to put 2 to 3 out at a time. I want to give each victim their own independent episode because I feel it's the best way I can honor them when telling their story. Don't forget when you see those missing and murder posts to click, like, share, and retweet. The more we share a face, the closer we get to solving a case. Until next time.